And welcome back to Subject to Discussion. I'm Sean O'Mac, Sean Daly, Sean World Series White Sox O'Mac Daly. There you go. And this is Subject Discussion on Wednesday at 7 o'clock Pacific Time, 9 p.m. Central if you're in Chicago, around U.S. Cellular Field, otherwise known as Comiskey Park, or 3 hours later, 10 o'clock if you're in New York, around Yankee Stadium. And what else? The program is archived over at spankwagon.net. Their program is heard every Friday starting at 7 o'clock Pacific Time here on lvrocks.com. And the email address for the program is subject2discussion@lvrocks.com, and it's the email. And the first guest I'm going to have in a little bit would be Richard Vague. He's the founding associate of AmericanRespect.com. It's a foreign policy advocacy group. And I remember last year there were full-page ads in several newspapers around the country that talked about our foreign policy, how it needed to be a little more common sense, a multi-pronged approach to foreign policy. Anyway, he's the gentleman who founded that group called AmericanRespect.com, and he'll be joining us in a little bit. And then in the second hour, hopefully we'll have our political report with Justin from the Dunkelfint, and he'll be on. I haven't heard from him all week, so we'll see about that. I had planned to bring on Matt Unger from the American Centrist Party, but I don't hear back from him either, so I don't know what's going on. I'm not taking it personally, but I am taking it personally. You know what I'm saying? I'm kind of like the chopper here, but so we'll see. And then we'll have an appearance by Mike Wilkins from White Sox Interactive, otherwise known as FlyingSock.com. So we're going to talk about the White Sox and the big brouhaha, who's going to throw out the first pitch. So we'll go into that when he comes in the second hour. And then next week I'll have Bill Roggio. Bill runs a site called The Fourth Rail. We're going to stay on the foreign policy kick. Roggio enlisted in the U.S. Army in 1991. He's in Desert Storm. He's been all over the place, been in Germany and everything else. So we look forward to talking to him next week. And how about those White Sox? Papa Joe Chevalier, thank you very much for the lead-in. And those White Sox, God bless them. It's a glorious day in the south side of Chicago. And they clinched that from those damn Angels. You know, the scoreboard blew up at Comiskey Park. Bless them. And then it's unbelievable. Unbelievable. And then I heard the airport was mobbed at Midway when they landed. And, of course, the Sox have to land on the south side. You know, you got to be kidding me. They're not going to land in O'Hare. I mean, it's the north side. No way. So they landed in Midway. And then the airport was mobbed with fans and well-wishers and everything else. So now they're taking a couple of days off to get ready for the first game on Saturday at Comiskey Park, well, now known as The Cell. So it's unbelievable. 1959 was the last time they were in the World Series, so it was great. So it's about time, too, because I said before, my grandfather used to take me to games when I was a kid and at the old ballpark, and it was always, I love that old stadium, and the Sox are always the underdogs in that city, they couldn't get the TV, they're on Channel 44, but you had to wiggle around your antennas and get Channel 44 in, then they're on Channel 32. Like 20 games a year, 30 games. Then they sold out to the devil and went on WGN for like 20 games a year. You know, in the meantime, they start up Sports Vision, which was a on TV type of thing and all that stuff. So it's good. It's good. You know, and Harry Carey was around. I mean, it's just glorious that the White Sox, the non-traditional, lowly White Sox are in the World Series now, the best team in the American League and the best team in Chicago baseball, I'd say. So.
You sure they're actually the best team?
Absolutely.
I think they're just the team that got there this year.
They are the best team in Chicago. I don't see the Cubs in it. They're choking on all their tradition and they're choking on their vine. I'm all for it. You know, I'm WGN. WGN rules that damn city. You know, that and the Tribune, the way they slant their coverage against the White Sox makes everybody sick in that city. So it's about time that they got in it. I hope they're choking on it over there at Wrigley Field. You know what I'm saying? And we'll also want to talk about Hurricane Wilma Flintstone. Hurricane Wilma Flintstone is rolling. I guess it was supposed to be the biggest hurricane ever. You know, the speeds are 170 miles an hour. This is supposed to be going to wallop west coast of Florida, which is where Naples is. You know, I have, my family has a place down there in Naples, and a friend of mine was buried down, or his parents are down there. That Stan Lipinski, his mother and father are living in Naples, but. You got to do something with these hurricanes. I mean, this is horrible. And what else am I talking about? Saddam Hussein had his trial today, and you can tell it's a bad day on TV trials when you see Judge Ito up there on the desk being the judge of the Saddam Hussein trial. then we had that horrendous murder of that lawyer's wife. Man, that was disgusting. I hear it described on TV. They had Nancy Grace talking about how she was like just beat over the head, and it sounds like she was dismembered. I don't know, but so anyway, and move on to the news to you until Mr. Vague calls in from American Respect. And the first story I have is from AlJazeera.net. I do scan all the news sites, even Al Jazeera, yes. Iran sends case to Saddam's trial. Now Iran wants to charge Saddam Hussein with war crimes as well. Iran wants to, first of all, I want to say hello to everybody in the chat room. Where were y'all last week? Little Buck is in there, Shadow One. Erect this, it's you, Diggs, I don't know, he's probably asleep, and Shadow One, so I'm glad we're all here. And I'm having a hard time getting Galactic a guest, so I'm sorry, I'm having to fill the whole show up with other things until you get back on the good terms with Galactic, with sci-fi. So anyway, but the Iran and Saddam's trial, Iran says it sent his own indictment charges against former Iraqi President Saddam Hussein to Iraq's government. Apparently, they want him to be charged for the war that they had between 80 and 88. And the conflict cost of lives up to 1 million people, most of them Iranians, and involved the use of nerve gas and other chemical weapons by Iraqi troops. So
that's what they're going after him for, isn't it? The nerve gas and
of his own people. Now that Iran wants them to go after him for Iranians people.
Yeah, because at that time, wasn't that against the law, international law, to use those gases?
It still is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Except I think it's okay to fire nerve gas in this part of Las Vegas, isn't it? The gas. Naked City? I don't know. The LV Rock Studio is in the Garden Spot of Las Vegas, otherwise known as the Naked City. Because there's not much here. It's all like smaller, like junkyards and things like that.
So and strip clubs.
Strip clubs and drug deals on the corner and everything else. So it's affectionately referred to as the Naked City.
And cops showing up
cops
after the show.
Cops showing up, yes, yeah. Yes. So anyway, and then we have this from Brussels. I got this from the EUObserver.com, which is the European Union Observer site. Brussels to launch Citizens Charm Offensive. They got nothing else better to do than trying to a PR offensive. The European Commission is to announce a major listening exercise and a bid to curry favor with citizens who have become disillusioned with the European Union. The Commission's Plan D for Democracy, Dialogue, and Debate, obtained by the EU Observer, will be presented on Thursday. They're trying to be, because France and the Dutch rejected the EU Constitution, and so now the EU is trying to go into this listening campaign. You know, we're going to listen. It's like a presidential campaign. We're going to listen. So I don't know how that works. And this is also today, from yesterday. Bush and Chertoff argue for a guest worker program. Seems like President Bush woke up out of a 6-year sleep. President Bush on Tuesday argued for his temporary worker plan for foreigners, hoping to win over skeptical conservatives with get tough promises about illegal immigration. It's about time. Bush says we're going to get control of our borders and make this country safer for all of our citizens. He signed a bill, $32 billion, that has large increases for patrolling borders, but fewer grants for local first responders and a freeze in transit security funding so they can stop them, but they don't have the money to get these people back to Mexico. I mean, what is he doing? I don't know. They say they're doing this to appease the conservatives over the judge nominee, Myers. So we'll see. But, I mean, Chertoff said that he will return every single illegal entrant, no exceptions, he said. Chertoff said that nearly 900,000 Mexicans who are caught entering the United States every year are returned immediately to Mexico. I don't know about that. But other parts of the system have nearly collapsed under the weight of the numbers. Yeah, no kidding. Let's hope so. Let's hope so. And then he also agreed with Ted Kennedy. Are we starting that already? He agreed with Kennedy that trying to deport all legal immigrants would not be possible. I've said that too. You got 11 million illegal immigrants. You can't pretty much go around and round up 11 million people and throw them out of the country. So, anyway. Looks like Sean doesn't want to be on camera tonight. What are we talking about? Am I on camera? Oh, I'm blocking with the paper? Sorry. This is a radio show, damn it, not a TV show. Anyway, I agree with Papa Joe, you know? The camera makes me nervous. I'll wave at the camera for once. Hi. Hi, Mom. report, this is from the Associated Press on Tuesday. IRA observing peace commitments, this is from the Irish Republican Army, as they have halted many of its underground activities, including bank robberies and vigilante attacks, and is broadly observing its July 28th peace declaration. Two government officials have read a confidential report, told the Associated Press. So that's good. The IRA is in observing peace, and they have until, I believe they said January, for to move on to the next part of the plan. I guess they have to be a certain amount of time where there's no conflict, no bombings, anything like that. So let's hope so. And then we had this from the EU Observer as well from Tuesday. Spain and France join forces on sub-Saharan immigration. So even Spain and France realize there's a problem with illegal immigration. Spain and France have come up with a joint proposal for a global immigration plan to be discussed at a meeting at the EU of EU leaders later this month. EU, maybe it's because they smell. PU, huh? No. The plan will include concrete guidelines on surveillance of EU borders. Wonder if we could use some of those ideas here. But also ideas on how to develop third world countries, above all, the sub-Saharan countries from which a lot of immigrants arrive from. So, I'm going to skip around. Introducing a... So they're going to crack down these illegal immigrants coming from Africa into Spain and France and all that. So it's about time. That's good. Like I said, I'm all for them coming in illegally, but illegally, all the countries, you know, I mean, it's like somebody breaking into your house. You want people to keep breaking into your house? No. I mean, come in legally. I mean, what kind of signals do we send to these people to come in legally if you see these people, you know, climbing over the fence or smuggling in under bombs of cars, you know? And then we had this from Tuesday. Group condemns chicken choking toy. No, this is not a sex toy from Olympic Garden or anything like that. A chicken toy that squawks and flaps its wings when strangled is grossly irresponsible and sends the wrong message to young children, a spokesman for leading an animal welfare group. The toy is manufactured by over in Taiwan. Is marketed for children over 3. A product description on the website says, grab him by the neck and he'll squawk and cluck like mad, flapping his wings and feet wildly as if he were really being choked. So I don't know. I thought it was kind of a funny type of story. And it says, what's next? Burn a cat, shoot a dog, this welfare guy was saying. Children of age are likely to turn around and try the same thing on their pet bird or even a cat or dog. Ah, that's true. I mean, but then they're going to wonder why the animal fights back. So I could see that as well. I mean, but I thought it was kind of a chicken choking story. It kind of implies something else for the adult audience. You know what I'm talking about. And then we have this. This is from Pennsylvania on Tuesday, York County, Pennsylvania. 1,700 warrants out for parents whose children skip school. A police crackdown in truancy in York County is targeting parents. School districts and law enforcement agencies have joined forces to fix the problem. Police have warrants for more than 1,700 parents with children who cut classes at least 15 times in a year. Man, I never was able to skip that class that many times a year. A couple times my grandfather used to pull me out and take me to the Comiskey Park to see the Sox, but not 15 times. Well, maybe it was 15 times. But still, I mean, this is, you know, ridiculous. These kids need to stay in school and learn. You know, they end up like me, you know, toiling away at the LB Rock Studios now. And troops, relax. This is, you know, these people can spend the money on something else. Look at this. Troops relax with musical pillow. A pillow that plays relaxing music has been sent by the Danish Army to its soldiers posted in Iraq and Kosovo to help them combat stress and tension. In a first test, we have sent 10 pillows each to Iraq and Kosovo, and they're being used by the troops. So they have about 540 troops in Iraq and 340 on a peacekeeping mission in Kosovo. What the hell?
Hey,
what's it going to say?
Does it actually say what the music is?
No, it doesn't say. No.
Is it like silent?
Probably. Probably Christmas music or, what's that Debbie Boone song? You Light Up My Life? I don't know. But I guess, yeah, let them spend and waste their money on a musical pillow. What else is going to happen, you know? I surprised, what's his name to come up with that? That guy that does the hairspray, the hell is his name?
You know, they actually came up with something the other day, which I think is kind of like the worst thing I've ever heard of.
Hmm.
And that's an MP3 player in breast implants.
Really?
Yeah, there's the storage device in one side, and then the other side is actually the player.
Wow.
So, I mean, what happens when the new ones come out and you get, like, more more storage in them or what? What do you do? It's all run by Bluetooth.
I don't know.
And how do you charge them?
I hope my guest is still calling in.
I just lost my guest.
Anyway, political polls. This one's from Chicago, from the Chicago Tribune and WGN. State Treasurer Judy Bear Topinka could be in a good position to run for governor of Illinois because the current governor, Blagojevich, is in a little bit of hot water. He's fighting with his father-in-law. His father-in-law is Richard Mell, an entrenched alderman from Chicago. A poll conducted by the Tribune and WGN, of course, found that she's an early favorite among Republicans to run for the job. That lady's been in office for years in Illinois. Also, Jim Oberweis was second with 15%. Now, Oberweis runs a dairy company in Chicago that has ice cream and milk and everything like that. So, and also Bill Brady and Steve Rauschenberger tied for with 7%. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens. Illinois is a strange state. They have a Democrat, Cook County, but then the rest of the state is usually Republican. You know, Thompson, we had Dan Walker, and a lot of the governors, most of the governors have been Republicans the last few years. And this is also from Connecticut. State unveils new system for tracking missing children. Hartford, Connecticut. Connecticut is a new way to track down missing children. The technology is called a Child is Missing Alert. This sounds like a good idea. If your child or loved one goes missing, the program can send up to 1,000 calls a minute to your neighbors. They'll give you the name, description, like a 3-year-old white female, 30 pounds, 3 feet tall, wearing a white T-shirt and blue jeans, last seen at blah, 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 2 in the afternoon. We need your help. Go out in the air and look around. That's brilliant. Brilliant. I like that idea. So it sends out all these calls, but nobody's answering our phone, because it's all going to go to the voicemail or answering machine. But I think it's an excellent idea, though. It gets everybody on the alert looking for this lost child. This next one is from Monday. Unknown creature terrorizes Gales Ferry. This is from Gales Ferry, Connecticut. It's not quite something of a horror movie, but residents in Gales Ferry say it's not far off. An unknown creature is on a killing spree. The folks who live in the neighborhood say something is killing cats and squirrels, and a prime suspect is a large fisher. The first time I saw it in the garage, I ran away as fast as I could. No kidding. It's like a giant ferret. It sounds like a possum like we have in Illinois. Attacking ducks, a number of lost cats. So it can grow up to 40 inches. Jesus. They catch that thing. This next one's from Sunday from San Francisco. PG&E asks for electricity increase. This is, I said, supposed to be a coming trend with the winter heating season coming up. All the electric rates are going to go through the roof with the gas and the heating oil. San Francisco electricity rates could sharply increase this winter for Bay Area residents who are already grappling with the record gasoline prices and preparing for soaring home heating costs. So PG&E is going to request a 2.5% rate hike. So, and this next one's from Sunday. Fire kills 600-pound man. Despite frantic rescue efforts by neighbors and firefighters, a 600-pound Missouri man has died after his mobile home caught fire. Jesus, was he roasted, I guess, huh? Authorities said that Timothy Morris called 911 after the fire began. His two young daughters begged neighbors to help their father, who suffered from health problems and could not walk. I guess you would if you weighed 600 pounds. The fire official says the 45-year-old probably, of course, died from smoke inhalation. No kidding. School investigated for allegedly fixing athletes' grades. Principal on administrative leave. This is from Ohio, from Brooklyn, Ohio. School officials are launching an investigation of a local high school after allegations surfaced of athletes' grades being fixed. You're kidding me. Schools actually fix grades for their athletes? No, my God, it's never happened before. An Ohio High School Athletic Association said that anonymous tip led to investigation with centers on athletes of grades of several football players. I'm shocked that, oh, my God, it's never happened before in the country. Never. So I hope they get the bottom of that. I got to get these kids to finish school, do the grades, do their schoolwork the way they're supposed to, not get any preference training from these damn teachers or the school because they want to have a good game on Friday night, for crying out loud. This next one's from the Chicago Sun-Times. Champaign, Illinois ethanol plant proposal. 2 months after President Bush signed a comprehensive energy bill calling for increased production of alternative fuels such as ethanol, several investors and companies are considering building ethanol plants in East Central Illinois. Good for them. Good for them. The area needs some redevelopment. announced plans for a plant near Gilman in Iroquois County. And so that's good. Area of Illinois needs some help. Some of these rural counties in Illinois just have no industry, and the farms are all gone or drying up or closed, so good for them. This one's from Sunday. Stewardess calls in threat to get the day off. Sri Lankan airline stewardess called in a bomb threat because she wanted a day off, a newspaper report on Sunday. Investigators traced the call and found it was made from a mobile phone belonging to the stewardess's boyfriend. So the stewardess was fired, no kidding. And Sri Lankan Airlines spokeswoman said that declined to either confirm or deny report. So here's a dim bulb. Wants a day off, so she calls in a bomb threat to the airline. Brilliant, brilliant. Long Island principal cancels. This is, I saw this. He was on O'Reilly's program, I think it was. Long Island principal cancels prom. Principal school willing to sponsor a prom, not an orgy. This is from Uniondale, New York. Brother Kenneth M. Hoagland heard all the stories about prom night debauchery at his Long Island High School. Students putting down $10,000 to run a party house in the Hamptons. Pre-prom cocktail parties followed by a trip to the dance and a liquor-loaded limo. Fathers chartering a boat for their children's late-night booze cruise. That's brilliant. Good, good, good. These parents. You know, what are these parents? You know, they idiots. So the principal sent a 2,000-word letter to the parents canceling the prom. He says, it's not primarily the sex, booze, and drugs that surround this event. It's problematic as they may be. It's rather the flaunting of affluence, assuming exaggerated expenses and all this stuff. These parents just spending money on these party houses and these liquor cars and everything else. Good for them. As he says, the school, we are withdrawing from the battle, allowing parents the full responsibility. So if they're willing to sponsor a prom, but not an orgy. So good for them. Good for him. I wish more schools do that. Lay down the law for these kids. You know, no drinking. Cut down on this, this sex all over the place and all this stuff. This next one is from Sunday. Horse brings in money for local nuns. The local order of nuns are putting a lot of faith in a six-old-month filly. Poor little sister was auctioned off in Saratoga Springs on Saturday for a price of $8,000. McMahon Farms purchased the horse. The six-month filly was a gift to the Little Sisters of the Poor in Latham from a Lake George couple. So that's good. That's a good little story, I think. The sister, Frances McKay, will be glad because we have so many bills we want to pay off. So I hope the nuns will keep all the proceeds of the sale and are entitled to 20% of poor Little Sisters' future winnings. That was good. Somebody's doing something good for these Little Sisters, these nuns and everything. Good to whoever did that. It's from here in Las Vegas. Road improvement could hit us at the pump. This is now that you've probably spent your DMV tax rebate. We've all, in Nevada, we've all gotten rebates from our car registration. And now the governor's going to raise the gas tax to pay us from roadworks. Now we got to give all that money back to the state of Nevada. Idiot. Why don't you just keep the money and put the money into the roads to begin with instead of giving it back? Now he's going to take it away. I mean, all the money and time and labor he spent with issuing these checks. Man, oh, man. The state could be looking at taking part of it back in other ways. A tax jump is being considered to help pay for highway projects. The idea of higher gas taxes gets a mixed review from drivers. Let me see here. Is this, where does all the money go? Okay, 18.4 cents of every gallon is used to pay federal tax. That's a federal gas tax, okay? 23 cents a gallon is used to pay Nevada taxes on leaded gas, okay? And up to 10 cents per gallon is used to pay for county taxes. Jesus, we got a state tax and we got county tax. And other taxes are used to pay for cleanup and inspection fees. I don't know. And then, folks, the diesel, of course, is higher. Taxes on diesel are 27 cents per gallon. So I say we take 18, 23, it's 41, and up to 10 cents for the, so it's 51 cents. If these county governments can get together, state, federal, and local, and eliminate the gas tax, the gas would drop down 50 cents a gallon here in Nevada. Wow. Charlotte NASCAR race turns into a debacle on Sunday. Slumped over and scowling, Tony Stewart made no effort to mask his disgust at their finishing a race, which he feared for his safety. He was alone, as Kevin Harvick called on NASCAR to halt series race at Lowe's Motor Speedway after a rash of exploding tires. I guess the surface at the racetrack was redone, and a lot of these tires, race cars, were blowing their tires going around the bends on the track. So. The race had 15 cautions, including 12 for accidents, and most were a result of blown tires. So, Yeah, where we are. A couple more minutes. Yeah, hopefully he's still calling in now. The message from Saturday morning. A dozen Red Cross call center employees indicted on federal charges. This is from Bakersfield, California. More than a dozen people from the Red Cross call center in Bakersfield have been indicted on federal charges of wire fraud for stealing money earmarked for Hurricane Katrina victims. And at least 7 of 15 suspects appeared in federal court today and pled not guilty. Oh, man. You hear all these stories, people ripping off these charities. This is terrible. Let's see. U.S. Attorney General says four suspects remain on the loose. Some were employees at the Hurricane Katrina Relief Center, and others were associated with someone who worked there. They're accused of obtaining false information and using it to pick up relief money from Western Union. Man. Makes you sick, doesn't it? Makes you forget the good story about that, you know, the horse with the nuns, and now, you know, this, you know, it's goodness and badness in people, you know, it just amazes me. And this one, college students charged with murdering baby. A University of Southern California student was charged Thursday with murder after giving birth and allegedly dumping the newborn into a trash bin where he died. Holly Ashcraft, 21, was charged with one count of murder and one count of child abuse. She was arrested, and the prosecutors are going to ask for a bail to be set at $2 million. So this poor baby, why didn't she just give the kid to the fire department? All these states have these laws now where you can, you know, within 72 hours of baby's birth, you can put the kid at the firehouse or police station or anywhere. I mean, why dumping the kid in the trash? Horrible. This is also from Vegas. Vegas could be getting a new water park. Good news for thrill seekers. Las Vegas could be getting a new water park. Officials with a California company says plans for a new Las Vegas Wet n' Wild could be announced by the end of the year. We had a Wet n' Wild here in Las Vegas on north on the strip there before you get to the Sahara Hotel on the right. And anyway, the landowners took it back, and now they're going to build a hotel there or timeshare, but they're going to rebuild Wet n' Wild somewhere else in town. That's always good. I used to work at Wet n' Wild a couple years ago. I sold tickets. I sold season passes there. $96 for season passes. So,
It's a desert.
Yeah. Well,
why do we need a water park in a desert?
I think it's good for the kids, give them something to do instead of running around these summers having sex and all that stuff. Because, you know, I've said before, we need 12-month schools here all over. I think not just in Vegas, all over the country, because these summers are off. These idle minds are the playgrounds of the devil, I'd say. And we need these, honest to God, and we need 12-month schools. You know, these kids are off for the summers. And in Vegas, what are you going to do? You're a teenager, you know, and even halfway decent, good looking, you're going to have sex like crazy on the weekends. Even people, teachers have said, they've told me, when schools come back in August and September, they have to retrain these people because like, their learning has dropped back. You know, they had to bring them back up to the level they were when the school ended in June. You know, that's why I said we need 12-month schools. Every other industrialized country in the world has 12-month schools. Why don't we do that here in the United States? It doesn't make any sense. So, I don't know. And FBI man punched out plane window on Saturday. This is about that idiot who was flying from Vegas, and he woke up out of a dream and punched out a window on the plane. I mean, I don't know what these people are doing. They're just, you know, deranged. You know, pitching these planes. Hope they're charging them. The witness says he was psychotic, maybe resolve a drug abuse. So, I don't know. We'll see. And, I think our guest is on the line. I'll bring him on. Mr. Richard Vegas joining us from AmericanRespect.com. Sir, are you there?
I am.
Hi. Well, thank you very much for being on the program.
Well, thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. It's an honor having you on. I've been I referred to American Respect last year during the campaign and everything, and you've got a wonderful project going on here. I mean, I agree wholeheartedly. We need a new approach to our foreign policy, maybe a more of a common sense approach. But again, I compliment you on everything. It's both of the essays are full of information and everything else. It's just wonderful.
Well, thanks. It's an important issue, and, you know, we're concerned about it.
Yeah. Now, give the listeners out there who aren't familiar a little bit of information about what is American Respect.
Well, it's just a group of folks that are concerned about the direction the war's taken. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it felt like we were taking the wrong approach and that we were creating more trouble than we were solving. And just wanted to put our views out there to get them into the national dialogue.
Mm. And then why you, though? I mean, a lot of people, I had a lot of emails for you, too, questions, but everybody says, why you? Well, why did you decide this was an issue you wanted to tackle?
You know, myself personally, I have only had a moderate interest in politics. You know, I vote and I keep up with things, but really haven't been that involved. And, you know, the group of folks that have kind of come together around American Express really represent a diverse group of people, some that have been very active, some that are conservative, some that are liberal, some that are libertarian. I mean, it's an eclectic group, but what we have in common is the belief that this is a big issue. This is a big deal. I mean, we're going to spend $1 trillion on this war. We're probably close to having spent $500 billion on this war already. You know, some of the consequences are higher energy prices. You know, Barron's says that oil at $65 or $70 a barrel would be $10 to $15 a barrel lower if we had not invaded Iraq. The deficit is an all-time high. Interest rates are rising. Economic growth is moderate and could slow. And those are just the economic issues. You know, on the human side, it's a much more terrible story. You know, thousands upon thousands of people are dying. You know, the number, by some estimates, is approaching 100,000 by the time you add folks in from the Middle East. You have terrorists being created, hate being disseminated. And so we really view this as an exceptionally important issue, and didn't see anything but retribution and hate and misunderstanding in the national dialogue, and wanted to get our voice into there.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've said since I started this program that there's no way in the world we could, like Bush says, defeat terrorism. Terrorism's, like even you say in the essay, that terrorism's been around for 6,000 years. We're never going to defeat terrorism. And wage a war on. I agree. Afghanistan, yes, because Osama bin Laden, yes, nail him. But I mean, Iraq. I mean, if Bush was to go in there, I wish he would have finished what we started in Afghanistan first, and then built the case for Iraq.
Yeah, it's an odd thing because, you know, there are today any number of dictators that have committed atrocities as much or more than Saddam Hussein has. I mean, you have folks in Sudan, Chechnya, you could name any number of countries today where what has happened is worse just in terms of the number of people that have been killed. Than in Iraq. So, you know, the curiosity of it all is why Iraq, why now versus all these other folks? And we've created a mess, and it's a tough problem.
Yeah. Well, and where was I here? That you can't compare it to Vietnam. Do you remember that in Vietnam, over 1 million Vietnamese died, as compared to 50,000 Americans, and we lost that war. And people are losing track of this. Yeah. I just think we need to make a multi-prong. We can't turn the clock back now. We started this. I think now we have to see this through to the end in Iraq, because like Powell said, we broke the pottery toy, whatever that was he referred to, and I think we have to finish it.
Well, it's a real dilemma. One of the other things about Vietnam is that this part of the debate is very similar. You know, there was a lot of talk in the last few years of Vietnam that, you know, we couldn't leave because we'd be encouraging communists, and if we left, communism would just go to the next country and the next, and we had to finish what we had started, and we were responsible. We had to, the arguments that were presented then are essentially those that are being put forward now, and there's a lot of folks out there that take it as a given that it would be a bad thing for us to leave. You know, take it as a, an axiom that if we left, it would be terrible. Well, I don't think that's a given. You know, there's a lot of very thoughtful people. Peter Galbraith in the New York Review of Books. There was a book in various publications put out by the Cato Institute that the Journal of Foreign Affairs has a number of articles on this, where people who are kind of in the mix look at it and don't think it would be a bad thing for us to just kind of hand the keys over. Kurds, you take care of this. Shiites, you take care of this. Sunnis, you take this, that we would, in a matter of just a few months, exit. Things wouldn't necessarily, and I don't have the answer, and I don't claim to, but I do know there are a lot of very thoughtful people who do think that a short-term exit would be the best thing.
Well, and then also in the essay you mentioned that Al-Qaeda has expressed clearly to me concerns with their well-known, and I think you said it's these poor and oppressed that feel they're aggrieved, and they see the big United States trampling on the land over in Saudi Arabia and over in Iraq, which is, you can be argued, it's the birthplace of civilization, and they're just going nuts over there, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Bush administration has put this forward as an ideological issue. You know, they hate us, and because we're free. You know, one of the columnists, I think it was Michael Barone of U.S. News and World Report, said the counter to that is the Swedish argument. If they hated people because they were free, they'd be invading Sweden too. And that it's not a war of ideology; it's a war of specific grievances. You know, their land. These lands are occupied. There are places like Kashmir, Chechnya, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Palestine, where for decades and decades and decades there have been grievances that have not been addressed. And, you know, I think what's clear, no matter what your other beliefs are, it's very clear if things were dealt with in some reasonably equitable fashion in places like that, that a lot of people over there would be a lot less aggrieved than they are now. I mean, you know, I was in Morocco this summer, which is on the western edge of North Africa, you know, many countries over from there, and, you know, the average guy on the street there is and has been aggrieved about the Palestine issue for virtually their entire lives, and it's not a trivial issue to them.
No, it's well, and it's another part you mentioned in terms about Israel. We got to pull back, you know, from our like biased view towards Israel as well. And I completely agree that's a problem that inflames everybody over there in the Middle East, that we're seeing to be so, you know, tilting towards Israel that it enrages these people.
Yeah, and I don't think we should be doing less for Israel. I think Israel is a noble country and a spectacular country and an important country. And I don't think we should be doing less for those good people. I just think we have neglected other parts of the Middle East where support is just as much needed. And one of the things that has astonished me in this process is how easily we went from spending nothing to $150 to $200 billion a year on this. I mean, a vast sum of money. And contrast that to what we have been doing financially. Like Jeffrey Sachs in his book, The End of Poverty, he suggests that the entire U.S. aid budget for Africa, the entire annual budget, is less than $5 billion. And so, you know, we're doing things on the preventative side. The Millennium Fund, which the Millennium Challenge, which was Bush's initiative that he put forward to help economically in the Middle East pursuant to 9/11, has not received but a pittance of its $1 billion in promised funding. It has not received that, and yet we're spending $150 billion on the war. It's the classic situation of being penny wise and pound foolish. We're spending not very much at all on prevention, and $150 billion or $200 billion a year on killing people.
Well, yeah, and then we have the hurricane mess that we're going to spend more in that in 6 months than we spend in Iraq so far, and then this money is mounting up, and who's going to be paying these bills? You know, it's crazy.
Yeah, and you know, economically, I must confess that I'm a conservative. You know, I characterize myself as more progressive on social issues, but conservative on, you know, business and economic issues. And to have a Republican president creating historic record high deficits is a bit of an irony.
Yeah. And then you have about the we should build up trade. I've been on your website looking at the Beyond the Bullets conference with Mr. Was it DeSoto?
Hernando DeSoto.
And a brilliant man. I mean, I've been talking to his aide about getting him on my program, and about the brilliant man about trade. How we, you know, absolutely we need to, you know, I say free trade across the world because we need trade. We need to give these people a hand up versus a hand out.
Yeah, I mean, there's two approaches you can take to aid, and, mm-hmm. and almost all of the U.S. aid has been of the relief type rather than the kind of the building type. And mm-hmm. it's one of those classic issues where, you know, give me a fish and I'll eat for a day, and teach me to fish and I'll eat for a lifetime. Mm-hmm. You know, if we can create economic capital and economic growth in these countries, you know, it could, a little bit can go a long, long way. Mm-hmm. And it, what Hernando spoke at our conference, well, it was very interesting. Because my comment to, when I first recruited him to be our keynote speaker, I had him on the phone, and I said, you know, isn't it too late? You know, haven't we really just alienated everybody in Iraq?
Mm-hmm.
And his response to me was, no, it's not too late. He said, in Japan, immediately after World War II, you know, there was no population that had more reason to be more angry at anyone than the average Japanese common man had to be at the United States because of the bombing of Tokyo itself, the absolute leveling of Tokyo, the Nagasaki and Hiroshima, obviously. And he said what happened there in the period of 1947 to 1952 was, under American sponsorship, land reform, where the land, which for generations, for hundreds of years, had been in the possession of the feudal lords, and you know, the common, everyday Japanese guy had not been a landowner in history.
Mm-hmm.
And during a five-year period from 47 to 52, under American sponsorship, there was a massive transfer of land ownership from the feudal lords to the squatters, to the guy who had built his shack or his hut on a piece of land. The ownership of that was transferred. And that did several things. It put an economic supercharger on the economy. It was it created an enormous middle class in Japan where one had not existed prior to that in the feudal system. And you had a transfer of sympathies. You had people who had every reason to be angry and resentful and bitter and owned nothing, had zero capital. And these average folks all of a sudden owned a piece of land.
Mm-hmm.
And it made a tremendous difference in, you know, their attitudes about the United States, their attitudes about their role in Japan, the capital they had to build homes and to start businesses. And that's the most recent research that Hernando de Soto and his group have done, and it's going to be published here shortly, I believe.
Very good.
But it just electrified the audience there. It was just a great story to tell. I mean, that kind of thing could be done in Afghanistan or Iraq or Morocco, for that matter.
Well, it was a brilliant. He spoke for, I think, I was watching on Windows Media. It was 48 minutes. Seems like those 48 minutes just flew by because the man was so interesting and everything he said, you know, made sense. And you know, I just hope more of these countries listen to him. You know, and just like he's a, you know, brilliant man.
Yeah, he's got a lot of contacts over there, but you know, it kind of gets into this bureaucratic grind, and I mean, you really have to work to execute his ideas and not just give it lip service. But it's very rare to find an individual like that who is both brilliant and charismatic, and he certainly fills the bill.
Oh, absolutely. I think he should be on get his own little talk show or something like that. Or I mean, just he's like a brilliant radio voice too.
Yeah, he's a great speaker.
Yeah, and then he had the second essay. Now the second essay was what? This year you put out the second essay, correct?
Right.
Correct. And then it was a follow up about solutions. Follow up on the first essay. Correct.
That's right.
Talking about the election's over, but now the issue still remains that our foreign policy. We need I still say we need a multi-pronged approach like triangulation. Do you think triangulation is like Kissinger advocated? Is that the resolution to all this?
What do you mean by triangulation?
Well, I mean like he said, like you unite different parties by their mutual interests. You know, like the Israelis and the Palestinians, they all want to live. They both want to live in peace in their own land. So we kind of have to unite them around that.
Yeah, I mean, when you boil it right down to it, everybody kind of operates in their own self-interest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you and I do. You know, the guy on the street does. Countries do, and people everywhere have the same motives. You know, they want to be able to put bread on the table. They want to for their lives to matter. They want to enjoy themselves and have love. And people's basic needs everywhere are the same. And if you can get them aligned and kind of give them a push and what have you, if people are destitute and desperate, their grievances are going to come to the forefront more readily, and they're going to be more vulnerable to extremists like Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
If they're making progress and getting somewhere, they're going to blow off. They're not going to pay as much attention to Al-Qaeda.
Mm-hmm.
So, to that extent, I think what you're saying about Kissinger is right.
Yeah. Well, and then he also in the second essay you mentioned about Turkey, how it's absolute that they should put Turkey into the EU because it'll send a signal to that part of the world. I mean, I don't understand the struggle they're having getting into the EU. I mean, Turkey, if I understand, is a somewhat wealthy country, huh?
You know, it's a real mystery to me, and I have read and talked to folks about that.
Mm-hmm.
If Turkey's entry into the EU, it would be a perfect example of the kind of thing that we ought to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
It increases trade. It increases the commonality of interests. You know, it supports a democratic and progressive Islamic country.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's very important to see Turkey to continue to progress. I mean, it could be the democratic example to the other parts of the Middle East.
Absolutely. I understand why Britain doesn't lean on them or France. I mean, they see this as a historic opportunity by putting Turkey in there. It'll open up that part of the world.
It's very troubling. And what I understand is that if Turkey is not allowed to join the EU, they're going to take that as
insult.
A fundamental insult.
Mm.
And there will be a lot of bitterness that comes out of that.
I hope not, because for years, I mean, Turkey's always had issues with Greece. I hope if they do get rejected, it doesn't set off some more of a tension between those two countries, huh?
Yeah, you have that. The issue, the tension that's literally hundreds of years old.
Mm.
You know, you take a potential positive, and you turn it into a probable negative.
Mm. And what else do you have? Talk about wealth opportunities. I agree. We got to do more. We got to open up the trade, get our products in there, and then buy a rug, whatever it is, from Pakistan, because it gives the people in there some money in their pockets. I mean, absolutely. But what more can our country do? I mean, more of these CAFTAs and NAFTAs? I mean, what do you think?
You know, I read immediately after 9/11 that the Middle East, was one of the highest. It might have been the single highest percentage growth area for U.S. companies like Procter & Gamble and other kind of everyday U.S. companies. So, you know, even though I'm sure it's not a huge market in terms of percent growth, I think they were looking at, double and triple digit annual growth in the purchase of Crest and Tide and products like that in the Middle East. I mean, American countries benefit when we have access to foreign markets. It's been historically one of the most important engines of growth and one of the most important contributors to our quality of life.
Mm.
I mean, I can't think of why we wouldn't want to trade with anyone anywhere in the world. And, there's just not a lot of effort and money going into that.
Absolutely. And then also in the page 6 of the second essay, hope you don't mind, I'm going through both of the essays here.
Well, I appreciate that.
No, they're very interesting. And in today, he's mentioned what I think is probably the key, and I've said that before on this program, that, you know, that Israel giving over the land in the West Bank is because, you know, they're not, you know, they're losing population. They're almost, you know, they're going to be extinct if they keep going with the suicide bombings, because you said in today's Israel, the Palestinian population has grown at 3%, and the Israeli population is not. I mean, that's a key factor. Either they're going to make a deal or compromise, or they're going to be wiped out.
Well, you know, it's something that people don't like to talk about, mm-hmm. and it is a difficult subject. But one of the things that is a bedrock fact when you analyze any of this stuff mm-hmm. is general population growth trends, and these statistics may be wrong, and I'd be welcome to hear that they are wrong, but mm-hmm. generally speaking, across the world, the Caucasian population, what we would conventionally think of as the white population, is growing at a rate not much higher than 0% per annum.
Mm-hmm.
And there's other populations, like the Hispanic population and the Muslim population, that are growing at, you know, 2 or 3, I've even heard numbers higher than that, mm-hmm. percent per annum. That's just a reality. I mean, a friend of mine was saying in South Africa that the black population there was outgrowing the Caucasian population in a similar fashion, you know, 3 or 4% per year versus zero. And my friend, who was a black individual and very proud of Nelson Mandela, nevertheless said, even if Nelson Mandela had not existed, or others like him had not existed, the fact that population growth fact made it inevitable that blacks would increasingly come to power in that part of the world. And so you have demographic trends that are almost impossible to reverse, and which we ignore at our own peril, to use the cliche. So, you know, there's every demographic reason in areas like Palestine and Greece, as you mentioned, and Bosnia and Herzegovina and Chechnya and Kashmir and others, to make sure and accommodate an increasingly meaningful population.
Hmm. Yeah, and then at the end of the second essay, you quoted from the Declaration of Independence, which I think is key there. We seem to forget about the Declaration of Independence when it's convenient for us. You know what I mean? It's the founding document of our country, or when it's in a movie. You know, he said, when we remember Lincoln's admonishment in his second inaugural address, with malice toward none and with charity for all, and George Washington, in his farewell address to Congress, observe good faith and justice toward all nations, cultivate peace and harmony with all. Because, like I said, we're all on the same planet together. We're going to have to. We can't go around bombing the whole world here. I mean, you know what I'm saying? We got to figure some way to get along with these other countries and the Muslims and these religions, huh?
You know, the Americans that I think that with the passage of time that we collectively consider to be the greatest Americans have been the ones with a magnanimous spirit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, you know, it's easy to be vengeful and hateful and retributive, but the folks that continue to stand out in our thinking are people like Abraham Lincoln, when he did say, with malice toward none. And, you know, remember that it was Lincoln's untimely death that really allowed Reconstruction in the South to have a vengeful or retributive nature to it, and really created a century's worth of problems in the South, because the North, the folks from the North were haughty and did get vengeance and were opportunistic rather than magnanimous in the way they dealt with the South. George Washington, in dealing with England and France and dealing with, you know, the entire situation there, was someone that the country could depend on to be fair and equitable and magnanimous, made an unbelievable contribution to setting the tone of the United States.
Yeah.
And I just don't feel that same spirit right now, the one where an inclusive, magnanimous spirit. I think that's one of the most important characteristics of our country.
Yeah, and we're always so compassionate. I mean, we're sending helicopters and tents and all that over to Pakistan because of the earthquake while we're still struggling with Katrina and Rita and Wilma Flintstone's going to hit us next. I mean, it's the character of our country, the fabric that we're always giving. You know, even in our harshest times, we're still giving to Pakistan, which I think is amazing.
Yeah, and I think you see it again and again. Mm-hmm. It's within the character of people, the people themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it kind of gets down back to one of the things we've said, that at the end of the day, friendship and giving are more powerful than hate mm-hmm. and vengeance.
Yeah. Now, looking out to the future of American respect, where are you going from here? I mean, are you in this for the long haul? I mean, how are you going to gauge your success?
You know, we're just trying to, you know, one of the things that we have seen is that there's a lot of people who are emotionally or instinctively against our current policies, mm-hmm. but they don't really have the intellectual substructure of it.
Mm-hmm.
And what we hope we've done or what we've tried to do is provide some of that, intellectual underpinning for the position that many people are instinctively taking emotionally.
Mm.
Our conference was extremely well received. We, you know, standing room only. Mm. We had a great audience there from all kinds of constituencies in D.C. and we've gotten great feedback.
Mm.
And we're already talking about ways we can continue to have the message. There, we might host a series of dinners and try to. We had a dinner the night before the conference and had a senator and a congressman and a columnist for U.S. News and World Report and a columnist from the Financial Times of London and a former ambassador and a lot of other folks at the dinner. We had about 20 people there.
How about a radio show host? Was anybody there?
No? No radio show. No radio. We were looking for you, but you didn't show up. But, continuing to try to get there in front of key decision makers and just tell our story and see if it continues to resonate and see if we can contribute to kind of a change in feeling and policy about all this.
Well, it's like I said, I sent an email to tell them why I started this program, kind of geared towards college-age students and get away from this political shout and yell show as you usually get on radio and have a discussions you won't normally find. Like, you wouldn't find a discussion like this on Rush Limbaugh or anywhere else. I mean, I think we need more of these, like, long-form discussions about the issues that matter to this country.
Yeah, the problem is that it doesn't get the ratings the way the attack
radio
journalism gets ratings. So, it's a little bit of a problem. But it's great to have a chance to talk about these kind of things where hopefully a few folks listen and a few folks take a little bit of this away with them.
Well, Richard, I thank you very much for being on the program. We're at the end of our time with you. So, again, I really do appreciate you being on. I've been after your group for a year to be on, so I'm glad you saw fit to be on the program. I do appreciate it, sir.
Well, thanks for the opportunity, and you guys take care.
Thank you. You too, sir.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Richard Vague of the AmericanRespect.com site, Foreign Policy Advocacy Group. And we appreciate him being on the program. And we'll be back in the second hour with maybe our political report, maybe with not. I don't know, maybe Mark could drag out your book report from last week. No? And then we're talking about the White Sox. We got the White Sox guests coming up at the second half of the second hour. So anyway, we'll be right back in just a few minutes. Good night, or stay tuned.
Wonders turned the trick back in 1906. Shoeless Joe, please say that it ain't so. Comiskey still was there, but the teams were only fair. Applin came, aches and pains, he fell off 10 or so. Talking baseball, Benura and Big Ed. Sox baseball, Colin Shaw and Ted. Cuccinello, Jimmy Dykes, and Nick Altrock. Horton Lee, Cass, Michael, Sewell, and Haas. Talking baseball, the South Side and the Sox. Siri hit four in one game just before Paul Richards came. The fans were thrilled by Aparicio. Sherm Lawler, Jungle Jim, then Lopez, he came in. All you need is lots of speed and the Sox go, go. I'm talking baseball. Billy Pierce, Pizarro, Sox of baseball. Carrasquel, Romano, Jim Landis, Minoso, Nellie Fox. One home run list had Melton at the top. Baseball, the South Side and the Sox. When you're talking White Sox baseball, Bob Elson and Wilbur Wood. Remember Hockett in the pocket, Dick Allen sending up those rockets. How the ball would fly, na na hey hey goodbye. Well, winning ugly's mighty pretty for Sox fans from the Windy City. Tony's got the pale hose standing tall. There's Vance and Rudy Law, Harold Baines for sure. Kittle can pop him and Dotson can stop him, so let's play ball. Talk baseball, Lloyd, Bannister and Coos. Sox of baseball, Luzinski, Hoyt and Cruz. The Chorikis and Fletcher makes the stops. Britt Burns and Carlton led them to the top. We're talking baseball, the South Side and the Sox, Chicago baseball, the South Side and the Sox. Hey, hey, goodbye.
And welcome back to the second hour of Subject to Discussion, Subject to the White Sox. There you go. And anybody know who they're playing yet in the World Series? I don't know. St. Louis, I don't know. I'm a little worried because Tony La Russa used to manage the White Sox. So I don't know. And Houston's got that weird ballpark with the mound out in the center field. So I'm not sure. But anyway, that was my little tribute to the Chicago White Sox, who are in the World Series. So it was my
amazingly enough, the greatest
baseball team in the American League swept the world champion Boston Red Sox, beat the hell out of the Angels.
Well, who said the Red Sox should have ever been there either?
Oh,
I mean,
they were defending world champions. You got to be the best team in the American League to get to the World Series. The best team in the American League of the Chicago White Sox. But every, you know. And what else? Time to kick some Astro ass. You better believe it. So hopefully we'll see if they who they play. Anybody knows? It's Houston or who? And we're waiting for a call, hopefully, by Justin from the Dunkelvent. But in the meantime, we'll return to our book report from last week from the Battlestar Galactica magazine by Mark here. Where were we in the review? Where's Muppet when we need him?
I think I actually remember anything from last week.
He was reviewing the magazine because, you know, the magazine finally came out here in Las Vegas. And, well, first of all, I mentioned that the Big Goof is not sitting near the room for the first time in 2 months. Praise God. He's the White Sob. Anyway, but the his assignment was to review the Battlestar Galactica magazine and get back to us with the report on the magazine. I thought it was okay. They get into that goofy tech manual stuff, and it's a good show. But I hate when they get into the Cylon Scum report and all that. I mean, what'd you think?
Well, a lot of it was just it seemed like promotion for the actors. Like, it was really interesting reading about almost all the different projects he's working on. But it seemed like every single time they had anything going were writing about anything, they were promoting every single thing every actor was doing but Battlestar Galactica. So it was like a book of actors' other projects.
Oh, really?
They'd have like a little bit about what they did in the series and a little like a funny story or something. Mm-hmm. And then the whole rest of it was about every other thing they were doing.
Really?
And I didn't expect that out of a fan-type magazine for just Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, you should be talking about their character and why they're talking about their other projects. I mean, I wasn't aware even any of them had any other projects.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah, big time.
Huh. Well, Muppet. Muppet that has another project or no? There he is. There's Muppet. He's always... Oh, poor Muppet.
it doesn't seem like Muppet's got any other projects.
He's doing those Elpo commercials that he got from Lauren Green in his will. But actually, Muppet was the second highest most podcasted show behind Katie Sackhoff. I don't know what this says about the rest of the cast members hanging on there, but Muppet's going over like a rocket, I'm telling you.
Well, I think we picked up all the old Battlestar Galactica fans because, you know, Muppet was on there like, oh, Muppet!
Speaking of that, I read, where was it? On Yahoo, I think it was, or an E Online, wherever the hell it is, that Rick Springfield's going back to General Hospital. His career has really gone down the drain. Rick Springfield's going back to his role he played 20 years ago on General Hospital. So he's going back to that program. So I don't know if he can't get any
that
work or what.
That show's actually on still?
General Hospital?
Yeah.
They never take those soap operas off the air. But so I thought that was a little trivia from Galactica fans. Springfield is back.
There's only so many amnesia attacks, brain cancers. I mean, did his character die off last time?
I don't know.
They mentioned in the article that they talked to him.
He said for some reason his character was never killed off on the show. So
that's why.
And what else are they saying? Oh, Scully Girl is saying that in the new issue is going to have an interview with Aaron Douglas. I wonder if it's a fresh interview or it's going to be, you know, maybe they're going to copy my one of my interviews with Aaron Douglas. He's put on this show. And excuse me, where's my plug from the Aaron Douglas and them on for my program on the magazine? I don't see any plugs for subject to discussion. Do you?
No.
I have to get on him. They should.
But they did have something really cool in the magazine.
Really?
I was talking about it last week. They had the logistics behind the scenes with the 3D animation and everything, which I really enjoyed. That was probably the best part of the entire magazine.
Mm-hmm.
But the other part was they actually showed all of the way they came up with the pyramid ball game.
Ah.
That was kind of interesting. It went from a triangle shape to a square to a circle, and they actually explained the game.
Hmm.
I guess they kind of came up with some rules. So
really?
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, well, like, when Katie Sackhoff was on, she said her and whatever the hell his name was, Xander, was that his name? Is that his name? Xander.
I can't remember.
Whatever his name was. They came up with the rules that, you know, as they went along, except remember she said the one rule is that the ball had to go in the triangle first, or the pyramid, and then they could, you know, it's like a combination of basketball and rugby, I think she said, right?
Well, the way it kind of turned out was it's sort of like basketball and rugby. But that pyramid in the center, there's a safe zones all around the entire court.
Ah.
And you can only take a step without putting it into either one of the goals or putting it into a safe zone. But if they can tackle you and everything when you're taking that one step, but it's either one or two steps. But if you put the ball on the ground in that triangle, they can't touch you.
Really?
Yeah, as long as it's touching the safe spot, you can't. Be hit or anything.
No, that sounds like a game that could be marketed. I told her when she was on it, she should market this game, or they should market it. You know, they have a little, you know, basketball courts. They could do it, you know, here in Vegas, you know, like a, you know, they call it a pyramid game or something.
Well, they'd have to pad everything, though, because that wrought iron sides there, that'd be pretty dangerous.
Yeah. Now, Scully Girl's standing up. Now they will market the game to us. Anders was his name. Anders, that's who it was. So, and then actually, like I said, I had a call from Leah Cairns, and she mentioned that she got the script for the final episode of the second season. She's in it.
Oh, wait. Spoiler right there.
Oh, yeah. Well, no. I
she didn't
spoiler.
Die.
Well, I don't know. She got the, who knows, because she got the script for the last episode of the second season. We don't know if she's going to make it out of that second. You know,
well, at least she's in it,
At least
though.
She's in it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe just long enough to get blown away. I don't know. But, yeah, she says she's, you know, in the last episode, last two episodes she left a message, and she's trying to get somebody to be a guest on the program. She says she hasn't been able to get in touch with Candace McClure yet, because like they said, there's two units that shoot Galactica, so she must be on the second unit. And she's working on somebody else, and whoever this was is a girl. She was supposed to call me, but she hasn't. I think it's that one that that flipped out at the end of the season, or doing the meds, or whatever it was, you know, doing the stims.
Stims. Yeah.
I think that's the one, because she said a name. I didn't make any. I deleted the message, so I don't know who she said, but I know it was, you know, Katie Sackhoff. No, she's been on. Grace Park. I love to get Grace Park on, but the woman, I don't know. She doesn't do interviews, or I don't know what's going on. Cause I had her, you know, lined up that one week, and then I don't know what happened, and then they pulled her, and then, I don't know. I mean. I don't know.
She's been interviewed in a lot of other stuff.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah. I don't know why she hasn't come on my
program.
But
the guys that interviewed the stuff in that Battlestar Galactica magazine, they didn't. They were really wishy-washy. It was really horrible.
They don't ask probing questions like I do.
No. They didn't really ask him like very good questions.
No.
And it was all questions that were steered. It was like they were all scripted.
Yeah.
You know, it was pretty horrible. I didn't like it at all for that part.
Yeah, and what else about the book report? Anything else?
No, whoever the company is that makes it was actually advertising a lot of other fan magazines in that one.
Oh, Titan.
Yeah,
magazines.
Yeah, they were all the advertising space that seemed like they even had was all for their other magazines.
Hmm.
So that's probably why the magazine costs so much, is because there's not any normal advertising in it at all.
Horrible. And because they've also got a deal for what comic books they're going to come out with, a novel about the original series, the new series, excuse me, and what else did I read? Something else about the series. Koenig Rules. Koenig's going to be doing some kind of symposium. in Indiana next year, and some with Galactica is the basis of his symposium he's going to be running, and so we wish him well on that. So everybody's getting involved in this. I mean, I hope they don't. I have a feeling they'll come out with these technical magazines, books now, like they do with Star Trek. You hear about the photon torpedoes.
Yeah,
and,
my parents had one of the original ones.
Really?
Yeah, it showed all the dimensions. I think my dad got it for a gift or something.
Wow.
Or he got it, you know, as a gift from someone. And there was, like, all the specs on the uniforms. Mm. I mean, you could have literally made a uniform from this.
Wow.
There was all the specs for all the ships, all the different types of ships, the Klingons and all those. They had all the weapon system diagrams. It was really crazy.
But I wonder if they'll do that with Galactica, though, because, you know what, Ron Moore, he in his blog, he mentions how, you know, purposely they're staying away from all that stuff on Galactica because he found during Star Trek, that, you know, they want to do something about the engines or whatever, you know, whatever that they remembered two seasons ago we said this and this and this, and now we can't go back and do that because
nope.
we dig ourselves in the hole. So now they can do it. He said that as the series goes along, they could do aspects about the ship itself, the engines and things like that, you know, and, you know, but not do it all at the beginning of the show because then you dig yourself into a storyline hole. How do you get yourselves out of that, you know?
Yeah.
And he mentioned... You talked about the when they went down to COBOL and, you know, the projection room. He even said, he goes, oh, you know, maybe it's a holographic projection room. And he said, and he put in parentheses, even he's not sure what it was that he was, where they were in. Because people are asking him, how did Adama and all of them get out of that room and back to the fleet?
It's magic.
Yeah.
It's a transporter.
Yeah, they left that transport, but they left that open, you know, because he said the original concept he had was that, but it was too expensive for the network, was the Cylons were going to attack at that time and make them run out of that projection room, and the thing was going to collapse, and that was the end of it.
Maybe it was those little gray guys off of Stargate, because they were always transporting people different places into these little rooms where they had to do these little puzzles and do this and that, and then all of a sudden they'd talk to, like, a Viking. It was Thor, and he was saying, oh, my mighty hammer is now imprisoned you. And, you know, it could be. Maybe that's their crossover time.
Maybe. Oh, man, I don't know. I don't know if they have a crossover. I really hope they don't have a crossover seeing all those shows. You know what? I have to tell you one thing, because as a favor to you, I've been watching Stargate SG-1.
Good.
I'm starting to get into it, because it's more serious than it was in the past. That's the problem I had with the show. It was so corny back then with MacGyver on it, and it was like,
well,
oh,
it wasn't
man.
Corny back then. It's just, the first two seasons, they had the
Asgard, you're talking about.
Yeah, Asgard.
Yes.
They had the original, you know, the original next, like, raw type character, the Gould, was a guy that had all of his guys wearing these big snake head things that would just kind of go trunk and, like, fold back, and it looked really dumb. I mean, how could these guys even fight in this stuff? Mm. It was really ridiculous compared to, like, the movie.
Yeah,
that was kind of dumb. Yeah. I have to admit, but
I like
the drama was
aspects.
Pretty decent.
Yeah, they what was the one on Friday? They had the one. It was. I don't know what it was. What's his name? And the chick were like, unconscious or something.
Wow. What's his name and the chick were unconscious?
Whatever the hell
is
it, the guy
that has actually happened one too many times in that show.
The guy who left the show and came back.
Which one?
Michael Shanks. His character was on some kind of a stretcher or something in the medical ward. And they're like in a dream. I don't know what it was.
Oh, okay.
It was hard to
what
follow.
What it was one of the girl, the girl that
switched over from
Farscape.
Yes,
I can't remember her name right now. The long black haired girl that was one of the peacekeepers on Farscape.
Scully should call in. Scully girl, you're an expert in Stargate. You should call in at 1-866-587-6257 and give us your 2 cents about Stargate. Since I'm not getting Galactic, I guess we're gonna go into the tank with Stargate guests. I guess, huh?
Going to
you
the gotta tank,
call
huh?
them. I gave you the numbers because I don't know who's who in that show. I don't know who these people are. You know?
Yeah, I'll get on that.
Right. But anyway, I thought it was an outstanding episode because then they ended it. They started with the religion aspect, wherever it is, starting to get into mythology, which is excellent because it plays into Galactica pretty well. And
it doesn't play into Galactica.
Well,
what they've done is they've beaten back all these different groups, and they basically disbanded the Gould. The Gould are not a power that can even
do
anything.
Gould?
To them. Gould or Gould or yeah, how, a bunch
what's
of
his name? What's
different.
Name is Gould? Or he's talking to Lloyd or what's it? Bo Bridges?
Yeah,
the Gould. Or
yeah,
like
it's all these different.
What the hell
like,
are you talking about?
It's all these different voices that they do. The Gould is what most of the humans call them, or the Terrans, or whatever the heck they call them now.
Claudia Black was the one from Farscape.
Yeah, that's her name. That's her
name. What about Serenity bombing in the box office?
I have yet to be able to go see that movie. I am definitely going to go see it. Serenity, the Firefly show was... I loved all the special effects animation stuff in it. It was a little bit... It was a little bit kind of happy-go-lucky, like, you know, kind of like one of those 90210 shows written.
Uh-huh.
But the original idea from it was made into the movie.
Huh.
And I think that having more action sequences, which you can do in a movie instead of in a series. Oh, it looks like we got a phone call.
Oh.
Here.
There we go. We got a caller. Actually, Diggs is reporting, our sports reporter, live on the scene, saying that the Houston Astros have won the National League pennants. Now it'll be the Houston Astros versus the White Sox in the World Series. Ooh, the networks all just love that one. But I think
Scully Girl,
Scully Girl is on the line. Scully Girl, welcome.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. I take it your audio isn't synced up with the internet.
No, we have a delay because, you know, bad language. So, you know, there's a delay on the internet.
Okay.
But, yeah, I say I've been watching the SG-1. I'm getting more and more into it. So it's a good thing, right?
Yeah.
And then, what were we talking about? What did we have her call in for?
The Stargate
stuff. Oh, yeah. Now
the storylines.
The storylines. Do you like the storylines going more and more to the mythology and all this?
I kind of like all of it, but I did like where it was going with Vala until they got rid of her, at least for a while.
Yeah, now she's not a regular, right? She's like, she guest stars, right? She shows up from time to time. And then now, like I said last week, in January when they come back, they're bringing the music back for the opening themes for both shows.
That'd be good.
Yeah, because a lot of people like that. It's part of Stargate's lore is that music that they have, right?
Yeah.
And then which of the two Stargate shows you like better, SG-1 or you like Atlantis?
I like them both, but I think I still like the original the most because I've been watching it longer.
Wow, really? That's been like 10 years, right?
Getting close, yeah.
9 seasons? Well, see, I don't know. See, the 9 seasons, has it been on that long?
Yeah, it has.
9 years?
They started off on Showtime.
Wow. Yes.
And Showtime made, I think, the first 2 seasons. And then it started getting replayed, like Saturday mornings on Fox.
Yeah, it was a half-hour show or something
horrible,
like
horrible time slots, and it was just ridiculous. And then they started making some new seasons, and it started getting, like, an actual storyline instead of just shoot 'em up.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's when it just totally took off and went really, really well.
Yeah. Now, Scully Girl, where are you from?
Pennsylvania.
Oh, Pennsylvania. Wow. Well, thank you for calling in. But now, the two shows, I mean, do you think, like, we talk about with Koenig Rules, I don't know how long you've been listening to this program, but we think there's too many of these shows in a row on Friday nights. They should move something off of Friday night. What do you think?
I like sitting watching it all night, but I think to some extent then people don't stay for all of them.
Yeah, especially...
But I'd watch it whenever it's on. So.
Especially Galactica.
That's the night that I don't have anything to do here at the studio.
Mm.
And I go home and I make sure that I get home, and then I would sit down and I'd watch Stargate, then I'd watch Atlantis, and then I'd watch Battlestar Galactica.
Mm.
And to tell you the truth, I was actually... starting to, like, just do stuff on the computer, work on different websites, and leave the reruns of all the stuff that originally had played earlier in the day on. So,
Well, you Scully Girl.
I try to watch it every Friday night. Now they have Firefly on ahead of time, which is good, too.
Yeah, that's 4 hours. That's 4 hours now, though. I mean, it's a lot of time. People sit through all that to get the Galactica. You know, I mean, that's what I do. I'm like, oh, man, I got to suffer through 3 hours of this garbage to get get to the good show.
I'm going to have to get you. I've got all, six or eight seasons,
is
what they're up
please.
To now.
Yeah.
But I've got every single one of them.
Really? Wow.
Every single one, every single episode.
Scully, have you gotten the DVD yet?
Yeah, I don't have season 8. That's the only one, so
no.
I haven't been able to afford it yet.
Really? Now, how about the DVD of Galactica? Did you get that yet?
No, I'm getting it for Christmas.
Oh, very good. Now, did you see the story today? Was that they're going to do a spinoff of Doctor Who?
Doctor Who never made it, did it?
Well, no, there's a new Doctor Who in the BBC.
Yeah, but it didn't make it.
Well,
it never went on air, did it?
Oh, yeah, it did.
I thought it got
there.
Canceled.
No, it's doing real well, but they're going to do a spinoff that might just make it here to the United States. It's called, have you watching Doctor Who at all, or can you get Doctor Who, Scott?
I don't think we get it here.
Oh.
I've never seen it.
I wish we could get that show, because I think sci-fi should put Doctor Who and the spinoff on, like, Saturdays maybe a Galactica spinoff on Sundays or whatever day it is, and then they build in there at night, you know, or move Firefly over there to Sunday night, you know?
Yeah.
Because now it looks like they might be coming back as a series, because it's obvious the movie didn't do too well, so they might make it back into a series. What do you think?
I would think that'd be a great idea.
Yeah. I mean, do you think they'll do it?
I hope so. I'll watch it.
Yeah, but then they should move it to, like, Saturday and start a whole new night on Saturdays.
What, are you trying for the job of programming director?
It just makes sense. Why is Sci-Fi putting all these good shows on one night?
Because that's my night off.
I expect
them to be there now.
I know, but I swear to God, I should be in charge of network programming, because you don't put all your shows, all the good top-rated shows, on one night. You sprinkle them around the schedule to help bring up the other nights. Because, you know, if they do a Firefly new series on Saturday, and they followed it up with Doctor Who or the Resistance Galactica spinoff, whatever like that, and then I think you build a whole second night of I'd watch the Galactica spinoff. What about you, Scully?
Sci-Fi's been on
for
a while.
Yeah, definitely. I think that sounds good. I think Firefly could do good if they brought it back, if it's on the Sci-Fi channel. I think Fox just didn't carry it well enough.
Yeah, well, Sci-Fi in the chat room is saying Doctor Who was too expensive and BBC wanted too much money to air it. So, and so Sci-Fi, I think it's a she, I don't know, saying that Sci-Fi Friday is cool. So, I agree, but I think it's just too many shows.
I think you just need to get into Stargate.
I like Atlantis. I'm getting into Atlantis.
Atlantis is a great show.
I like Atlantis,
show.
Yeah.
I really like that one a lot.
How about you, Scully? What do you think? Do you think Atlantis, you like it?
Yeah, I like both of them.
Really? Do you think Atlantis is going to last as long as SG-1, or?
I don't know. It seems to be getting good ratings, as far as I know. So.
Yeah. Now I wonder how long they'll keep SG-1 going, because, you know, it's been on 9 years. I mean, how many more years does the show have anyway?
Well, they just started a whole new storyline. They took 8 or 9 years and with just one storyline.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they could go another 7 or 8 years.
Can you imagine?
Well, actually, this is a very, very good storyline with the religious aspect of it, where the groups are coming in, and if you don't accept what they want you to accept, then they're going to kill off the entire planet.
Yeah.
I mean, it's actually really good.
Yeah. What do you think, Scully?
Yeah, with the Ori. Yeah, it's interesting. Definitely different now that the Gould are dead, so.
Hmm. Now, what about now? They've done one crossover between the two shows, right? They've done, like, a crossover?
Well, yeah. Every once in a while. Well, they did to begin with, because that's how they got there.
They found Atlantis.
So that was, like, the beginning episodes of it.
Now, what about that one scene at the end of that one episode where they showed some planet? It looked like Kobol. I hope they're not going to do an overlap with Galactica.
They're not going to.
I think you're just
paranoid.
Unless that's how Adam and them got back into the fleet. They walked through the Stargate.
It was the Asgard. It was the Asgard. And Thor's hammer.
Asgard teleported them up to the fleet. Now, as Scully, we've asked you for you. Now, who do you think is not going to make it to the third season of Galactica? Who from the main cast thing is not going to make it?
Don't know. I've heard so far who I know. Kerning has said wouldn't so far, but I don't know. I want everybody to make it.
Well, I know, but I mean, we know some. You know, they got to kill off somebody because it's.
Well, why don't they do it like Star Trek used to, where they just bring some unnamed person that was a security guard over and just kill them? I mean,
well, it's part
I like
of the thing.
That better.
Part of the thing is they shock you with these. You know, who they kill off? They shock you with that. You know. I don't know. I didn't think Laura Rosen was going to make it, but now, according to our spoilers, it's like she is going to make it. But, I mean, somebody, you know.
I think, though, they ought to bring over some of the characters, maybe, that were on the original show that aren't on it anymore. Not that are, you know, dead, but some of the older characters, have them make appearances once in a while.
Muffet.
Muffet was, yes. Muffet's going to be the Cylon God, from what I understand. Yes. And, Muffet can show up. I mean, why not, huh? What do you think? Did you like the Muffet show I did when I interviewed? Were you here when I interviewed Muffet?
Yeah, but I've never seen the original series. So.
There he is. There's Muffet. But what do you think about Rick Springfield going back to General Hospital, huh? I think it's only a matter of time before he shows up on the Galactica series, huh?
Probably.
You think he'll show up as Zarek's son or something like that? Or is Zarek's brother?
If he shows up on Galactica, I'm refusing to watch it anymore. If any actor from a daytime soap opera makes it, I will refuse to watch it.
I think Adam Rich is showing up as a silent god on Galactica. He was on that show with Lauren Green, the Firehouse show. Remember that? How old are you, Scully?
I'm
23. Oh, so they did some Firehouse show with Lorne Greene and Adam Rich from Eight Is Enough, and that was like, oh my God, you're combining Galactica with Eight Is Enough. That just wouldn't survive, and it didn't. But I think it'd be funny to bring Adam Rich on as the.
No.
So
that would not be funny. No. You need to stop those thoughts.
But anyway, do it. Thumbs up or thumbs down to the Stargate actor? Should I get him on the show, Scully?
For what? They are starting characters? Yeah.
I'm trying
that's
to.
Right. If you call them, they'll come. I know Jason's been waiting for calls. So.
Yeah, I passed the numbers to Mark here, so he'll get on the ball this week and get him on the
tomorrow's ball. My day to catch up on everything.
There you go. Just, I don't know. I feel, but he knows the series better than I do. I really have to get somebody on it. He knows, you know, it's a good character that we can draw some listeners in, so I'd rather him do it than me, because I don't know who I'm talking to. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
No, the two guests that we were talking about, they're actually two really interesting guests about the show. There's actually a lot that these two
we'll reserve
what they did.
The second half hour of next week for a Stargate guest.
I don't know. I had to talk to him first.
All right. Well, Scully, we'll let you go. All right.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Sir. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
And that was Scully Girl calling in. Wow. I think I've had like two call-ins on this show since it's been on. But anyway, that was good. Nice little conversation about Stargate. I kept up the conversation. I BS my way through that one because I don't know who's who. I know Shepard. Who's Colonel Shepard? Shepard is who's that? He's on SG.
Colonel Shepard is on Atlantis. Is not an SG team.
Yes,
he's on Atlantis team.
Atlantis team. And then Dr. Weir is Atlantis, right?
Yep.
And again, who's that blonde chick that went off, had a baby, and came back on the? That might be our.
Got another call.
Yes,
here.
Let's see who this is. And, I mean, they're all good shows, but I can't sit through all that. I'm sorry. I just think that since the Serenity movie was a bomb, they'll turn into a series again, because it just makes sense, especially for sci-fi. They're airing the Firefly anyway. Why not bring the show back since the movie was a bomb, you know? I say put it on Saturdays. You can get Firefly, Battlestar Galactica spinoff, and Doctor Who spinoff or something like that. So I think our next guest is with us. Sir, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi, and this I lost my stuff here. And this is Mike from the White Sox Interactive at theflyingsock.com. Is that correct?
That's correct.
There you
Hello
go.
From Chicago.
Hey.
The greatest city in the world to my second favorite city in the world.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm a former Chicagoan, and now it's according to Diggs, who's a Cub fan, and you get to verify this because I don't trust the Cub fans. Is it the Astros going to the World Series?
It is the Astros going to the World Series Saturday night on the South Side.
Wow.
As to get started, they just buttoned it up about 5 minutes ago. So.
Wow, so it is correct. So I guess we can trust that one Cub fan that owns this studio, correct?
No,
he's a good guy. And you know what? I got to say something. I understand that the Wrigley Field put up the Go White Sox thing on Wrigley Field.
They did. It was kind of weird. Right after the White Sox clinched the division, they did put a congratulations Chicago White Sox.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if they did anything when we won the pennant or anything like that. But Cub fans have been awful quiet in Chicago the past few days.
That figures. And how's the Cubune been doing? The Cubune been where the Sox headline going? Under the fold?
Actually, you'd be surprised. A big headline Monday morning, party like it's 1959 with a big picture of the team on the front.
Wow.
You know, the only real sniping we're getting is from the usual suspects, Jay Mariotti and Carol Slezak over what I like to call the Chicago Cub Times, the Sun Times.
Yeah. Oh.
The Tribune's been pretty fair, believe it or not.
You're kidding me. The Cub Times, wait a minute now, the Sun Times, when I was living there, I played in your old the White Sox song, which I got off of the flyingsock.com from your...
Go White Sox.
There you
go.
No, the Talking Sox Baseball.
Oh, okay. Talking
Sox
Baseball.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Now, I think it might be better if the Sox to face the Astros because Tony La Russa. Tony La Russa, I think, would have, it's a jinx right there. What do you think?
Right, well, that's part of it. You know, I think also with La Russa, you're getting more of a chess match. You know, he's probably, as much as I love Adigi, and I think Tony La Russa is probably the smartest manager in baseball. There's a reason the guy's been managing for 25 plus years and has as much success as he's had.
Absolutely.
Guillen, he's a smart guy. He's passionate. He's fiery. But not a lot of playoff experience there. You know, La Russa knows how to lay down the squeeze and everything else. And that would scare me.
Yeah.
Going up against him, you know, still have full faith in the Sox, though.
Yeah. And did Reinsdorf sit off the scoreboard when the Sox clinched it?
Oh, you mean the air raid sirens?
Yeah, no, because my sister said that the scoreboard went off and the Sox won the American League pennant.
I'm not sure. I was actually at a party in the West Loop area, kind of where I live.
Did you go to Midway to see the Sox come in?
No, they came in at about 6 in the morning, and unfortunately, being gainfully employed, I had to go to work. So. Yeah.
Now, do you have have you got World Series tickets?
Indeed, I do. I will be at Game 2.
Wow.
Working on tickets for Game 1.
Oh.
Through a friend of mine, but we'll see. I'm a partial season ticket holder. So
I would love to be there. You know, because my grandfather had season tickets for years in the old park. We used to sit section. I got my old green ticket here from the old Comiskey Park here, if I could dig it out. We sat in the box 62, tier 2, seat 5.
Very cool. You know, one of the things that bumps me out most, Sean, is I didn't move to Chicago until 1993.
Oh, no.
So I never got to see the old ballpark.
Oh, my God. What, are you crazy?
Only in pictures.
Oh, man. The old park was something. Yeah, this is a ticket from the old Comiskey Park from June 15th, 1978, I have here.
Wow, it was 3 years old. Huh?
Yeah, that's from when Bill Veeck owned the team.
Yeah.
But, I mean, oh, man. But I like the FlyingSock.com. It's got all the old Nancy Faust music on there, which I've been playing. And then the Disco Demolition Business. You know, which is a black eye in the team's history, but
You know, George Bull has done a great. You know, he started it originally as, you know, he had, you know, memories of Comiskey Park was kind of the focus of a Flying Sock line before the, you know, the interactive message boards and things came along.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people, you know, a lot of newcomers to the site don't realize the amount of history that's there. And I encourage them to check that out.
Yeah, I mean, well, I've been going through there for the memories of old Comiskey. I mean, all the, it was a great park. And, yeah, it killed me when they closed it. I was there for the last game, and it was a nightmare. But, I mean, you know, the new park, you know, they've done some remodeling of the new park. So they're trying to make it more fan-friendly.
Yeah, they've done a real, you know, it's gone from being kind of a, you know, utilitarian place to see a ball game and leave and do it, you know, a great fan experience. You know, you got the fan deck out in center field, which is a great place to catch the game from. You know, they shaved some rows off the upper deck and gave it kind of that old time. I don't know. I guess call it like a,
yeah,
you know, like a portico feel to it. It looks, with the columns, it looks kind of cool. You know, you lost some seating capacity, but it makes the place look a lot better.
Yeah. Well, they never were able to fill that new park up anyway, so it makes sense to take out some seats.
I'll tell you,
it's
been sold a lot this year. It's great to see.
Yeah. Well, it's about time because, you know,
exactly.
I mean, that they've been put on some, you know, damn good teams. I think a lot of that is the hatred towards Reinsdorf is still there. You know, they hate him for the 94
strike. The white flag trade. And I think at long last, you know, all of a sudden, everybody's praising him as the greatest sports owner in Chicago.
Well, yeah, until if they don't lose the World Series, they'll say he's the biggest asshole in sports too. So
yeah,
you know what I'm
that's
saying?
True.
You know how us Sox fans are. We'll turn on.
Us fans are, but I can't fault him for what he's done the past couple of years.
No.
Granted, I can fault him a lot for what he did back in '97. But
yeah, well, I mean, with Jerry Manuel, you know, I think he's cutting Reinsdorf's lawn right now. But I mean, Ozzie Guillen, even that was kind of like Ozzie Guillen, the guy doesn't speak English.
When Ozzie first hired, there was a lot of shock. You know, there's been a real thing in Chicago over the past couple of years with between the hiring Ozzie Guillen and when the Bears hired Lovie Smith. Why are they hiring these guys with no experience? You know. And Ozzie comes out, you know, he had a decent season in 2004, but not a great one.
Yeah.
But he proved, you know, he was fiery, he was passionate, he was going to kind of change the way things were played in spite of the fact that, you know, he had no managerial experience at all. And it's really, you know, it's paid dividends, you know, maybe to bring somebody in there, let him build a team around what he wants to see, what he saw, you know, when he was with the Marlins, and, you know, prove that, you know, just because he's, you know, in the younger echelon of managers doesn't mean he can't run a team with the best of them.
Yeah, so. You know who I think probably the happiest one is probably Nancy Faust. I mean, she's been sitting there at that damn Oregon for 20 years.
Exactly.
You know,
she finally gets to see a World Series.
Oh, good
Nancy's
for
her. Nancy's a treasure that's uniquely our own. And,
absolutely.
I've met her a couple times. Wonderful person.
Yes. I actually have her music collection at home. She,
old Nancy Faust plays the hit CD. They call her the Babe Ruth of stadium organist. I mean, she's been there a long time. So.
Non-White Sox fans, which is probably most of the listeners, the White Sox have an organist named Nancy Faust, and she is like the, she's been rated throughout the years as the greatest organist in baseball. I mean, she gets the crowd going, and she, you know, na-na, hey, goodbye. Ooh. She started that up in 78. I mean, it's good for her. I mean, she's finally going to be freezing her ass off, but she's going to be, you know, seeing a World Series.
Exactly, isn't it?
Yeah, and
long time coming for
it. Yeah, and now, what's the controversy now with the first pitch? Who is going to throw out the first pitch at the first game? People saying it's Frank Thomas. I don't think so. I hope not, because my feeling is he's a bum and a hack, and he won't be around next year. He's been useless for 3 years. I think
right. I've heard everything from Frank Thomas to Michael Jordan to President Bush. So I don't know.
Michael Jordan. Oh,
yeah, you know they say, you know, because Jordan, you know, he is a, you know, Chicago sports icon. You know, his connection to Reinsdorf.
I'm an Oprah.
I mean, well, you know, if they're going to have Jordan do it, they may as well have Oprah do it, too.
Well, somebody said that maybe even Harry Carey's widow might throw out the
right,
first
and there
pitch.
Was talk about Harry Carey's widow or, you know, the Veeck family. What I'd like to see is, you know, a tribute to the 59 team. You know, maybe Aparicio and somebody from Nellie Fox's family come out and throw it. I got to disagree about Frank Thomas being a hack. You know, I mean, the guy.
You don't think so?
He's been hurt a lot. You know, I'm by no means a Frank Thomas fan.
Yeah.
But, you know, I respect the guy. As, you know, I remember growing up watching him, you know, in the early 90s, just the greatest hitter in base. You know, he was for a time the greatest hitter in baseball. And, you know, it's unfortunate he's been so plagued by injuries the past few years because, you know, now he's finally, you know, he's with a team that's, you know, defining itself as one of the greatest. And, you know, I want the guy to be a part of it, like it or not. I mean, he carried that franchise for so many years.
Yeah, I mean,
I do think, you know, he's not the most clutch player in the world, but, you know, overall, you cannot help. I can't help but respect the guy for his batter's eye.
Yeah. Actually, the chat room saying, Diggs, the owner of LV Rocks and the Cup fan, saying it, yeah, Bush, I would love that. You know what? Bush wouldn't get out of the cell alive, I think, in the South Side.
Yeah, it's also true.
Shoot him.
The South Side Democratic machine would literally gobble him up.
It's got to be, I think, Mayor Daley or Mary Frances Vec. I mean, I don't know. I mean, somebody even said Jerry Reinsdorf. I'm like, oh, no.
No, I don't think Reinsdorf could throw the ball 30 feet, so.
I don't think Eddie Einhorn, maybe.
Yeah, but you know, I'd like, you know, the important thing, I'd like to see a link to the past. I'd like to see somebody. You know, somebody from the Fox family or Aparicio, or, you know, Chico Carrasquel passed away this past year. You know, maybe a representative from his family, just some connection to, you know, the great players that we had in the past that never got their shot.
How about somebody from the Comiskey family?
Are they, yeah, I think his grandson's still around.
Yeah.
So that may be a possibility.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see that. I mean, I don't know who else. Even Harry Carey's widow. I mean,
right,
that'd be kind of nice nod. And the
Cup
fans would just love that.
You know, anybody but the CEO of U.S. Cellular might be a good idea.
How about Ernie Banks? Is he still alive? Can he throw
Ernie's
up
the Ernie's still around. I saw him actually up on Dearborn, North Dearborn Street a couple years ago. He looks hale and hearty as ever.
Really? How about Ron Santo?
Ron Santo.
Yeah,
I don't think so.
He's an old Sox player, too. I mean, yeah. Steve Stone, hell, any of them. You know? I don't know.
Yeah. I will tell you this. You know, I'd love to see, you know, Steve Stone in the White Sox broadcast booth next year replacing John Rooney.
Ooh, yeah, he's still leaving now. John Rooney, for those of you who don't know, he's the White Sox play-by-play man on the radio, and now they're moving to the Score. But he's quitting, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess officially the word is that he quit, but, you know, supposedly, you know, the cat's pretty much out of the bag. The Score didn't give him the money that he or his agent thought he deserved. You know, Rooney's one of the best. There's a reason why he gets a lot of the national gigs on ESPN radio. You know, he's got a great voice. He's got a great, you know, he's got great booth chemistry, especially with the egomaniac that is Ed Farmer. And, you know, just knows so much about the history of the game. So nobody knows where he's going to end up. And, you know, right now nobody knows who's going to replace him. But, they're, you know, they're kicking Stone's name around as a possible.
Really? Would Steve Stone come to South Side? Wow.
Indeed.
Would he survive walking through the park there?
You know, I think he would. He was actually at the Marlins, when the Marlins and Expos played the games that got rescheduled because of the hurricane a couple years ago. Stone was down there sitting right next to Jerry Reinsdorf chit-chatting with a couple of schoolgirls. So, you know, there's definitely I think there's some mutual respect there.
I mean, the Cup fans will go nuts if Steve Stone. You know, it's like having what the hell?
Well, I guess we can get him back for them stealing away Harry Carey.
That Harry Carey business. They said even Harry Carey's place downtown is going to put up a sign congratulating the White Sox as well. So
yeah, they've got it up already.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, it's good. I mean, it's nice to see the city.
It's nice to see, you know, the city united around a team. You know, you haven't seen this much. You know, I think, obviously, you know, with the accomplishment being greater than what the Cubs did 2 years ago, you know, I haven't seen this much excitement about a sports team in Chicago since the Bulls in the late 90s.
Absolutely. I mean, I think we have our differences with the Cub fans and the Cubs and the Tribune and the Cubute and WG and all that business, but it's good to see the city, you know, at least temporarily rallying around the White Sox.
Exactly.
Know, for once. It's about damn time, too.
It is. It really is. You know, it's great to see. You know, I wear my White Sox jacket to work every day, get some high fives on the way. There's a couple of other guys in my condo building have Sox flags hanging off their balcony. It's great to see.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the buildings say ghost. They have the lights set up so it says ghost Sox. And it's wonderful to see. You know,
yeah.
Really.
Like I said, if the Cubs ever happen to get into the World Series, I'd be rooting them on, too, because it's good for the city of Chicago.
You know, they still represent the city of Chicago. And, you know, like I, you know, I'm not one of those. I'm not a Cub hater. I generally just pay them no mind most of the season. You know,
what?
I suppose, you know, they still, you know, like it or not, they wear the name Chicago on their jerseys, and you know, they represent our city. You know, I would say,
exactly.
You know, if they were to succeed by some divine intervention or miracle, I guess I'd have to pull for them.
Yes, actually, the chat room's up in arms. What kind of thugs are the White Sox fans? I keep asking if the people will survive a visit to the Cellular Field.
That's a lot of nonsense. it's a really unfortunate stereotype of White Sox fans that they're thugs, because of a couple instances we had a couple years ago.
You gotta admit, we are kind of thug-like.
Yeah, well, you know, I wouldn't say thug-like. It's, you know, it's the blue-collar South Side, Joe Six-Pack, shot in a beer, chain-smoking type.
Absolutely.
You know, it's real Chicagoans.
Exactly. Not the phony balonies up in the
North
Side.
No Chardonnay spilling yuppies yapping on their cell phones down there. So, you know, there's a. I don't think, you know, White Sox fans are really thugs. They're just a.
Well,
they're just kind of a different breed. You know, we have some unfortunate instances, but, you know, you've seen that. I mean, heck, a Cubs fan attacked Randy Myers at Wrigley Field a few years ago, and people seem to forget that.
That's right. And, yeah. And all those death threats to that poor guy that caught that baseball. Whatever the hell
exactly.
his name was.
Yeah,
Brockman,
Bachman.
Oh, yeah, the death threats and everything. That was ridiculous. I think Diggs was referring about the south side. Well, I was referring to Cellular Field, how, you know, so-and-so wouldn't survive walking into Cellular Field. Yeah, it was
right.
off the cup. But, you know, whoever it is, if Stone does come back, he'll be in for a lot of heckling, I think. You know what I'm saying?
That's true. But, you know, ultimately, you know, I think Sox fans also, you know, they are pretty baseball savvy. In spite of the fact that Stone did work for the Cubs, they also recognize the fact, you know, he's one hell of a baseball mind.
He is.
And I think ultimately, you know, Sox fans are smart enough that they'd warm to that.
Yeah, and he's been very fair and balanced with his.
He's never been a Sox trasher.
No. And throughout the season, when I happen to, you know, watch the Cubs on WGN here on cable, you know, he's always referring to the White Sox that are doing good. I mean, even Harry Carey's grandson, he was very complimentary as well.
Yeah, Jim was always very complimentary.
Yeah.
As well, so.
I mean, I know, you know, I mean, it's good. I mean, you know, it's my White Sox Kool-Aid kicking in. I think I'm getting a little overexcited here.
Black and white Kool-Aid.
That's right. The black and white Kool-Aid. The guys in black. What's it say? Back the guys in black or something. I forget what their slogan was, but
good guys wear black.
There
you go. Yeah, the mid-90s.
Yeah. Now the first what three games in Chicago, right?
We're gonna have two games in Chicago Saturday and Sunday night. Uh-huh. Off day Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
Off day Friday. Then if necessary, of course, the last couple games will be here in Chicago.
Now I don't have the records for me. How the Sox been doing against the Astros?
Sox have not played the Astros in, I think, 5 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
We last played the Central in the NL Central Interleague play in 2000.
Wow.
Or maybe it was 2001. I can't recall off the top of my head.
Wow.
I'm honestly not sure how we stacked up against them in the past. But, you know, I like our chances against them now. That's for sure.
Yeah, well, especially they have, you know, the longer playoffs. You know, they're beaten up a little bit. But we thought the same thing with the Angels. And the Angels came out and win in the first game. That was like, oh man! As soon as they won the first game, I'm like, oh no! You know what I mean?
Yeah. If you're a Sox fan,
you feel the hands going around your neck. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But actually, Diggs is saying that the Steve Stone wasn't with the Cubs this year, was he?
No, he wasn't. He was working for ESPN as an analyst. He left. He kind of left in a huff with the Cubs after last season.
Whoa, why? Why were we leaving a huff?
There was what basically happened with some of the Cub players in typical bitchy Cub player fashion. Complained about some of the comments Stone was making about them. Actually, I guess at one point they even called up to the booth to complain about
really?
It. So yeah, he left the Cubs. I didn't know. He left the last season. He did some work on the ESPN Game of the Week, and then was on. He was like the baseball expert on a WSCR, which is one of our sports radio talk stations here, and
really?
Going to be the flagship station for the White Sox.
Well, Steve Stone was honest. He just told it how it was. I mean,
right.
I love that in a broadcaster. When Harry was with the Sox, I think that's why Reinsdorf got rid of him, because Harry told exactly how it was,
exactly.
Good or bad.
As much as I enjoy Hawk Harrelson, I will admit, you know, he is the ultimate homer.
Yeah, yeah, and then at least that's what I said. You know, Harry Carey went to work for the Cubs, or either way, I mean, just Harry told how it was. I mean, when Pearsall was there, two of them used to just let them have it when they, you know, screwed up or botched something, or when a team was going down the drain. They even said it on the air, they were going down the drain this year.
Right.
Now, they'll let you know in April that the team's not going anywhere, you know, for the whole season. Yeah, but it's just now, where are we at here now? How's the weather there? They're going to be freezing their asses off.
Well, it's actually kind of funny. You know, a couple of days ago, it was, you know, low 70s and sunny, but you know, you get a real October chill here the past couple of days. It's dip down into the into the 60s, and you know, you look out of the sky, it's definitely an October sky. It's kind of cloudy and gray, and they're even calling for some rain this weekend. Let's hope we don't get any World Series games pushed back because of that. But it's weather is definitely going to favor the Sox. You know, they're much more of an all weather team than a team from Texas that plays in a dome half the year. You know, or a retractable dome half the year.
Yeah, well, hopefully that'll help them. I mean, and the Sox always have the best or one of the best road records in baseball.
They also had they were the best road team on the. In Major League Baseball this year.
Yeah, and Isaac Guillen was announced as the American League
Sporting News Manager of the Year. Yeah,
absolutely.
Of the year, so
hope it's not a curse.
Congrats to him. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's good for him. And he's like, what's it, the third one or fourth? What is it, Guillen, Manuel, I won it that, what year was that, 94? No.
Manuel won it in 2000. And then
LaRussa.
I think Torborg won it in 93. Yeah. It couldn't have been 93 because it's when the Blue Jays won the World Series. But I think Torborg won it at one point.
Yeah, and then La Russa won it in 83,
La Russa won
right?
In 83.
Yeah, so it's good for him. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I mean, he's only his second year of managing.
Yeah, we are really proud of Ozzie and what he's done with this ball club. You know, he's built the club around what he wants to see. There are a lot of people worried about, you know, getting rid of the power of guys like Lee and Ordonez. But, you know, in exchange for that, we got some great pitching. We got some speed.
Mm-hmm.
In Pinsenica, we got one hell of a feisty catcher in A.J. Puzynski. So.
Yeah. I mean, he was, they said, oh, he's trouble in the clubhouse and everything else. And then, the Sox even had problems with him in the past. And then now when he came to the Sox, he's like a whole different kind of player.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know?
Well, I think, you know, part of that is, you know, he's now playing for a no-BS guy like Ozzie Guillen.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, you know, Ozzie kind of forces you to, you know, to hunker down. And, you know, you want to play on my team, you play by my rules. And AJ's done that. And, in fact, you know, if you watch, during the games, who's the guy on top of the dugout screaming and yelling? Who is the first guy to throw his hands up in celebration when he clinched the pennant Sunday night? It was AJ Pierzynski.
Yeah. And then, Diggs is wishing us good luck on the series. It's good. I mean, he's a Cub fan, but
Diggs, you're a real sport. I appreciate it.
Yes. It's good for the Cub fans to rally around the White Sox.
Exactly.
Cubs suck.
That's the producer.
Cubs suck.
No. I don't want to jinx the Sox. You got to line up. I'm wearing the same underwear I've worn in the last 2 weeks now. Right?
I haven't clicked on that far, but I did wear the same jersey for most of the two straight last 2 weeks of the regular season.
White Sox fans are very superstitious.
Indeed, I wouldn't say we believe in jinxes and curses, but it doesn't mean we're not superstitious either. So.
Yeah, and then next year, if they raise the ticket prices for next year,
No word on that yet. I wouldn't be surprised. You know, I have heard that they're expecting an increase of up to 20% in season ticket holders.
Yeah.
You know, I think the best PR move possible for them would be to not raise prices. I mean, they did raise them a little bit this past season, and then 2 years before that. So I am, even if they were to raise them a couple bucks, it's still an affordable place to see a ball game.
Yeah, and a beautiful, clean stadium, modern.
Exactly, clean. It's real easy to get to. You know,
yes, Dan Ryan.
If you do drive, it's easy to park. You know, it's right off the Ryan. I take the red line there every time. Never have a problem. I'm home in 10, 15 minutes. So.
Yeah, and then what else? We had the. Dig says I'll kick your ass off the air if I hear that again. Wow, who said that? I don't know. I think it was Mark's little comment about the Cubs. I've turned into Switzerland here. I'm very diplomatic.
Okay, I won't say it.
I want you
again.
Please do retract your comment about the Cubs.
Okay, the Cubs.
Retract in the chat room.
The Cubs don't suck.
There you go.
Really?
There you go. But I mean, everybody expected the Cubs to blow the roof off the National League because they had, what's his name was the manager, Dusty
Baker. Yeah. Well, you know, Dusty Baker has proven one thing, both with in Chicago and in San Francisco, and that's that he really can't win when he needs to.
Yeah,
the guy blew. I can't figure out how you could blow a World Series and you have guys like Barry Bonds on your team. How to get out managed by Mike Socia, who at the time only had a couple of years experience, and then consistently come up short with the Cubs too. I got to wonder how much longer it's going to be before Cubs fans start calling for his head.
I think they already have, haven't they?
If they haven't already.
Yeah. I mean, because like they said, the Sox fans roar and the Cubs fans yay a lot. Is that correct?
Right.
Yeah. So, but I mean, it's. I hope they go all the way. I mean, I don't know. I'm feeling good, but I don't want to get overexcited.
I don't want to get overexcited either, but I'm feeling reasonably confident. You know, I mean, Houston's got some stellar pitching. You know, they got Roger Clemens, my boyhood idol, one of the greatest pitchers ever. They've got Pettit, who's got just tons and tons of playoff experience. They got one heck of a closer in Brad Lidge, aside from that hanging slider he threw Monday night.
Yeah.
pardon me. But, that lineup, those guys can hit, but they don't run.
Yeah.
Most of these guys, in their late 30s, they're veteran players, but you're not going to see the speed on the base paths that the White Sox are going to throw at you.
Well,
I don't think anybody, I don't think there's any chance of, while the Houston rotation, you could even say in terms of marquee names might look better on paper than ours does.
Mm-hmm.
After seeing what Contreras, Burley, Garland, and Garcia did in the ALCS, and even before that, down the stretch in the regular season and the division series against Boston, I'll put our pitching up against anybody's.
Yeah, don't jinx them. Don't get too overconfident.
I'm not too overconfident. I'm just... I'm confident, yes, but I'm not overconfident.
I hope so. Now, is WGN going to be airing the games as well, or is it strictly Fox?
Strictly going to be Fox. WGN did air the first round games. They were on ESPN for people that didn't have cable out here.
Mm-hmm.
But everything's going to be aired on Fox with only the national telecast.
Yeah.
So you get to listen to McCarver and Buck and their endless babble.
Now, when did WGN break in for they aired the game that they clinched, right?
Yeah, they did.
The whole game?
The whole game.
Oh, well, good for them.
Because, you know, they air a good chunk of the Sox afternoon games as it is.
Yes. Well, like 19 games or something?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And then
26 has got the rest, right?
And then WCIU had a lot of the Monday and Tuesday night games.
Yes.
And then Comcast Sports and then had the balance. Comcast Sports now, you know, for a network in its first year, has done a hell of a job covering the team.
Really. Well, Mike, that's our music. We have to let you go. We're at the end of the program. I appreciate being on.
Hey, Sean, it was a pleasure joining you.
Thank you.
Hope to toast a White Sox winner in a
absolutely.
Couple weeks.
Absolutely. Anyway, thank you very much for being on the program.
I appreciate it. You have a great night.
You
go
too.
White Sox.
Thank you. Absolutely.
Thanks.
And that was Mike Wilkins from White Sox Interactive at FlyingSox.com. And we appreciate him being on the program. Yes, I think Houston is tough, so I wouldn't be too – I know it's going to be a brutal World Series. But I'd take Houston versus St. Louis because that Tony La Russa bit is a jinx, I think, because he used to manage the White Sox. So, and next week would be Bill from the I lost my notes. Bill from the Fourth Rail. And stay tuned next for Wild Women in Vegas. Good night and have a pleasant tomorrow.